How much to the Buddha? How much to the Dharma? How much to the Sangha? Good morning. Good morning. Good afternoon. Thank you very much, Jacob, for
thank you
for inviting me to speak to you at all this morning. What I'm going to speak on this morning is something which I've been, one way or another, chewing on for a long time. I didn't realize until fairly recently just how long I've been chewing on it. And it most recently came to the surface during the past meditation retreat that the monks had, the Rohatsu session, earlier in this, or last month, December. And there was an interesting little interchange at the Abbot's Dharma ceremony between myself and the Master Echo, which apparently piqued the interest of a few of those who were there, and they've asked me to, well, say a little more, if you would. So that's what I'm going to try to do this morning, say a little more. This all goes back to what may or may not have been slightly accidental, in that some years ago, our Reverend Master Jiyu passed on to me a very lovely little religious implement on which was inscribed something in Japanese, and neither of us knew what was inscribed on it at the time she gave it to me, because it's inscribed in a type of character which I believe is technically called grass script, G-R-A-S-S, because it is very simplified and elegant and looks like sort of leaves of grass. But that makes it almost undecipherable, at least except to those who are highly skilled in such matters. And I am certainly not. I can't even read ordinary Japanese or Chinese. But with the assistance of our Reverend Hubert and a few others, we were able to find out what this lovely inscription meant. And it is a line from a koan. The koan referring to the story of an interchange between Chaochu, or Joshu in Japanese, and his master Nanchuan, Nanzen, back in the 800 CE. And what it says is, roughly translated, everyday mind, or ordinary mind, is the way. Now, fair enough. Okay, that's what it says. What does that mean? Oh dear. That's another one of those paradoxical Zen things, isn't it? You have to understand that I was a Buddhist for some years before I came to Zen. In fact, one could say I came to Zen kicking and screaming. I only ever came here, only ever met Reverend Master Jiyu, because the priest who gave me the lay precepts, as was when I was a layman, Reverend Gene Wagner of the American Buddhist Order, recommended me to come here, and I must admit I was highly skeptical, because I didn't want to have anything to do with these darn Zen people and their paradoxes. I was a Buddhist, after all. But he assured me on several occasions that she was actually all right, even though she was Zen. So I stuck my foot in. All downhill from there, as you can see. It's absurd on the face of it. We know what our everyday mind is. It's the problem, it's not the solution. At least the mind is. It chatters away on this and that and sings little ditties and gets a little emotional about heaven knows what and is constantly running around in circles. That is the way, capital W. Not being of the Rinzai tradition of Zen, I did not take this as a koan, as in something that one meditates with as the sort of spur to one's practice. But I must admit, it did sort of niggle at me, sort of in the back of my mind. I don't know if niggle is in the dictionary, but I sort of get the picture. Sort of sits back there and itches slightly. And after all, how can you use a religious implement that has an absurdity on the front of it? At least I couldn't very easily. Felt a little odd about that. So it sort of sat there. And every time I thought about it, it still made no sense. The Buddha, after all, taught that the cause of suffering is craving and attachment and the like. And it seems to me that that's what my everyday mind specializes in. And we're taught to look for the Buddha mind, to seek the unborn, the eternal. One of the scriptures just this morning was talking about acting from the true self, cap T, cap S. So obviously there is something else. There's another mind one has to go find, because it sure isn't this one. So one goes around looking for it, which causes one to do lots of good things, but in and of itself, I've never known it to, in the end, be the way you find, and that's the wrong word, what you are looking for, and that's the wrong word. I mean, sure, everything's got the Buddha nature. We can say my everyday mind is the Buddha, or is the way, because everything one does is the way. But somehow that isn't, I don't think that's what Nansen and Chaozhu were getting at. And so, anytime I took this out and sort of looked at it, and it wasn't very often, I would get up on my little hamster wheel and go round and round and round. And as a matter of fact, I do a lot of work in my hamster wheel. Those of you who, if there be any of you who have not had the opportunity to live in a household where there is a hamster, or visit someone for a while who has one, the wee little beasts really want to get out of those cages and go run around and unfortunately become snack food for the family dog or cat. So one has to keep them in the cage, more or less. And they have to get exercise somehow. And so someone devised this lovely little device. It's just a wheel that the hamster can crawl into and run to his heart's content. Round and round and round and round in the wheel he goes. Ka-chunk, 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 ka-chunk. They can do it for hours, going absolutely nowhere. And that has, to some extent, become a metaphor for a good portion of my inner life. It's usually thoughts being the sort I am, but sometimes it's one emotional upheaval after another, or one fantasy, or one dream after another, or, as I said before, just one little ditty going through my head. Right, this is the way, huh? Well, I don't know, and I can't tell you what it was that transpired between Nansen and Chaozhu. I don't know a whole lot about this Buddhism religion of ours. But one of the things I think I do know is that it's a whole lot bigger than what I know. So I can't offer you that. What I can offer is my current understanding, maybe it's the wrong word, my current way of living with this particular teaching. And it seems to me at the moment that this teaching is in fact not a paradox at all. It is very simple, very straightforward, and very practical. But to get to that point, I needed to realize a few things. First of all, this story, as most of the koan stories are, all of the koan stories are, is a little tiny vignette, a very important vignette, but a tiny vignette in the course of several people's lifetimes of training. So there is a before and there is an after to these stories. As you read them, the stories look complete in and of themselves, and in one sense they are, but in another very important sense they aren't. Some things are assumed. Some things are given. And one of the things that is given here is that these two, Nansen and Joshu, are committed Buddhists. They take the three refuges, and they take them seriously, and they have for years. And that is assumed. They follow the Eightfold Path, and have for years. And as a consequence of that, or in one form of looking at that, in the Zen form, they have meditated for years, been mindful as best they may for years, practiced the precepts for years. And it is assumed that, as does happen when one does the above, a certain amount of karma has been cleansed. A certain amount of that which conditioned this lifetime has been let go of. Enough so that when one is mindful, tries to be meditating, that at least once in a while, one steps off the hamster wheel. At least once in a while. At least once in a while, there is enough setting aside of the hamster wheel that one can at least sense, if not be with, something else. Something still, something I describe as very quiet, something clear. As the Sando Kai says, the knowing the basic truths from the experience of one's senses. And what is it that does that? What is it that is there? What is it that sets the hamster wheel aside for a moment? Well, for me, it's the everyday mind. There isn't any other. I've never found, so far, and I'm not claiming this to be the end of, be all and end all of training, I've never found another mind. I may be a very bad trainee. It all seems to happen to the everyday mind. It all seems to be part of the everyday mind, the ordinary mind. This mind, the mind, no tricks here. The mind that's sitting there listening to me yammer, the mind is yammering at you, that one. Exactly that one. That when it temporarily shuts up a little and simply steps off the hamster wheel for a while, that mind is the way. Cap W, way. Some translators have translated as the Tao. We aren't Taoists, and it's a little complex to explain what that means, but it has some points to it, in that it sort of means both means and the end wrapped into one. So that's sort of what I mean by the way. Yes. Okay, this everyday mind, just stepping off the hamster wheel, just meditating, without commenting on it, without thinking about it, not worrying about it, just doing it. Well, with that, by way of introduction, I'd like to look a little bit more closely at the actual story, because there's some interesting aspects of it that I think can flesh this out a bit. The version I'm going to read from is the translation by Reverend Sohako Ogata in his book Zen for the West, as a Rinzai priest. I'm not going to quote it exactly. I'm going to intersperse some other translators' translations of parts of it. But basically, it's going to be mostly from his. So this is case 19 of the Mumon Kan. My God, I'm talking a koan commentary. I never thought I'd hear that. Paradoxical Zen stuff. Okay. Nansen was once asked by Joshua, "What is the way?" Okay. Right. A very honest question. What is the way? Here I am. I'm willing. Tell me, what is the way? I've been training, I've been meditating, I've been doing all the things that are givens now. What is the way? Absolutely straightforward and honest question. And the answer comes back straightforwardly too. Nansen says, the ordinary mind, the everyday mind, is the way. Right. It's all we've got. As I think we'll see a bit later, it's not that there's a half dozen different minds, the ordinary mind, the Buddha mind, the mind that seeks the way, the true self, the eternal. It's not, these are not the cast of characters in a play that you go seek, that you go looking for with the everyday mind. They are the everyday mind in meditation. Not in the squirrel cage, not in the hamster wheel, but in meditation. There's a little problem with what I just said, but we'll get to that later. Joshua comes back, having been told that the everyday mind is the way, and he asks, should we try to get it? Boy, that's me. I mean, right, of course. What else would you ask? Again, a very honest question. Should we try to get it? Trouble is, what is trying? And how can you get your own everyday mind? If you're stuck with anything, it's that. You've got it. Okay? So you can't get it. And trying, while it is meritorious in many respects, ka-chunk, 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 it's more hamster wheel. So, Nansen comes back again. As soon as you try, you miss it. Absolutely straightforward. As soon as you try, you miss it. And here he's speaking for me again, Joshua. Well, how do we know without trying? Yes. Wrong question. Because you don't know. You are. It's not something, if Nansen is right, that the ordinary mind is the way in meditation. Then you can't know that, because it's the thing that knows stuff is the everyday mind. And it only knows stuff when it's going round and round and round and round. When it isn't going round and round and round, well, what's there? You're just sitting in the meditation hall. You're not knowing anything in particular, you're sitting there. You're sweeping the floor. You aren't knowing anything in particular. You're sweeping the floor. You're washing the dishes. What's to know? Again, nonsense comes back again. This is one of the reasons I love this one is that it is so straightforward, and these people are being so honest and compassionate with one another. Nansen says to his disciple, "The way is beyond both knowing and not knowing. Knowing is false perception." Right. Okay. A separation. Okay, now I know. Oh, oops. Huh? Well, I'm not sitting anymore, am I? Now I know I'm sitting. And not knowing is lack of awareness. Right. Okay. So let us please not go for a blankness. If you seek a blankness, after a while, you can manufacture one. You can manufacture all sorts of things. You can manufacture a blank not knowing. But that ain't the point, either. When one, and here the translator says, attains to the way, I'm going to... We know what he means, but it's got some grabby sort of connotation. Let's say, when one realizes, when one lives within the way, it is certain that one will see it as clearly as one sees the vastness of the universe. Okay? Certain that one will see it. What? The way, yes. The mind, the ordinary, everyday mind in meditation, which simply is, and it, capital IT, where the way is both means and goal, that for which we, quote, look, one will see, as clearly as it one sees the vastness of the universe. Well, why the vastness of the universe? Because they are one and the same. With what do you apprehend the vastness of the universe? It's the same thing that you apprehend the vastness of the universe with the same thing that you apprehend whether the stoplight is red or green. It is the everyday mind. And when the everyday mind is quiet for a bit, is still for a bit, is not in the hamster wheel for a bit, indeed, the vastness of the universe is there, just sitting still in the meditation hall, or just washing the dishes. And Nansen concludes saying, then, what is the use of arguing about it? Again, I'm going to change the translation a little, because arguing has some... These folks have not been arguing, eh? What is the use of thinking about it? What is the use of dreaming about it? What is the use of worrying about it? What is the use of being frightened of it? What is the use of you fill in the blank? Okay? What is the use of hamster wheeling about it? At these words, says the story, Joshu was suddenly enlightened. Okay, that's the end of the story. They usually end that way. One of the things I don't like about Zen stories. What does that mean? Fortunately, the collector of these stories, Mumon, who put these stories together later into an anthology or a collection known as the Mumon Khan, he makes some comments and writes a little poem to go with it. And they help explain what is meant by Joshu was suddenly enlightened. Because it's the end of the story, but it's not the end of Joshu. And it's not the end of Joshu's training. The man lived to 120. And this, if I remember correctly, happened when he was in his 70s or 80s. So there's quite a number of years left to Joshua here. As I And again, I'm not claiming this to be ultimate in any sense. As I understand it, what's being said here is that at this point, for the first time in his life, Joshu fully did what he and Nansen were just talking about. He fully and completely, for the first time, stepped off the hamster wheel. And there was his everyday mind in stillness, in brightness, in that place wherein the Sandokai speaks, wherein it says, to know the basic truth through the direct experience of the senses. Now, Mumon's comment. When Nansen was questioned by Joshu, he, Nansen, left the realm of form and passed beyond all bounds, i.e., he did, he was in that state wherein, of which he spoke, of which he spoke. His ordinary, everyday mind was still. That is the place from which he answered his disciple. Even though Joshu was immediately enlightened, says Mumon, he will reach that state for the first time after studying Zen for more than 30 more years. Oh my. So much for our next... I think we're going to have to cancel that weekend enlightenment intensive. That is a joke. We don't do that. And this is the reason, one of the reasons we don't do that. Okay. He will reach that state. What state? As best I can present it, he will reach that state in which Nansen was responding. That state in which his everyday mind was off its hamster wheel more or less all the time. In other words, he would be able to live within the stillness, the meditation, more or less continuously. And that point came only after 30 more years of practice. And what sort of practice was it? Well, they don't say, but we can imagine pretty easily. At least I think we can. He was taking his mind off his hamster wheel again and again and again, because he knew he could do it now. And he knew that it was what needed to be done. In addition to all the other things he already knew needed to be done, taking refuge in the three treasures, following the precepts of the Eightfold Path, and getting up and putting on his Buddhist robe and meditating every day, and then eating breakfast, and then washing the dishes. Now, I don't know where all this ends, but what does seem fairly clear is that what they speak of in these stories as enlightenment isn't the end of the story, i.e., it's not the end of training. It is perhaps a chapter mark between one chapter and another. In a book that I don't know how long or how thick that book is. But wherever it goes from there, I find it interesting that if we can believe the histories, we look at what Shakyamuni Buddha did after his supreme enlightenment, whatever that is. I don't claim to have a clue. And what the ancestors in Buddhism have done. And what they seem to have done has been to get up, put on their Buddhist robe, meditate,
have breakfast, and wash the dishes.
Dogen writes, training is enlightenment. Enlightenment is training. Very profound statement. Keeps growing on me. And finally, Muon offers a poem. First verse, hundreds of flowers in spring, and the moon in autumn, a cool breeze in summer, and snow in winter. Okay. So far, so good. Sounds kind of artsy on one level. But I don't think that's what's intended. I mean, it sounds real poetic. But I think what's intended is not that, but simply that's what's there. There are flowers. There's the moon. There is a breeze. There is the snow. They're just what's there. And his second line, second verse, every season is a good season for you, unless you cherish an idle thought in your mind. Gotcha! Thank you, Reverend Muon. The scripture says one twitch will surely break the rhythm, and it's true. Ka-chunk, 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 ka-chunk. Back on the wheel again. And it's also true, as Dogen says, look at it a bit later, it's equally true that one moment of returning to meditation, one moment of dropping off the attachments, one moment of stepping off the hamster wheel makes Buddha appear. And those two statements are not contradictory. And one twitch will break the riddle. So what do I mean, make Buddha appear? Well, this particular koan is one of several that seem to me to be related. The others, both in the same volume, the Muon koan, are case numbers 30 and 33. And they refer to some things that transpired with the master of Nanzen, his master, and his master was Baso, or Matsu in Chinese. These are our masters in a lineage which, by the way, which diverged from ours right after Huineng, the sixth patriarch. Now, these are all people in the discipleship line of Nangaku Ejo, who is a Dharma brother of Seigen Gyoshi in our line. The line of Nangaku and Baso and Nansen and Gyoshi will eventually be called the Rinzai line, but Rinzai hadn't come along yet, and so these stories had not been used as koans. Koan practice was not done as such. This is pre any division between Soto and Rinzai. This is sort of just Zen, as it were. So this is Baso, Matsu, the disciple, the master and grandmaster of these two. And this translation that I'm going to go from next, again, I'm not going to stick entirely to it, is Robert Aitken Roshi's in his book, The Gateless Barrier. A monk asked Matsu, what is Buddha? Okay, again, absolutely straightforward question. And Matsu said, this very mind is Buddha. Straightforward answer. Okay, let's see where we go with this. Muon's comment. Whoever understands the truth directly wears Buddha's robes, eats Buddha's food, speaks Buddha's words, takes Buddha's role. That is, you yourself are Buddha. Okay. Careful here. You eat Buddhist food and wear Buddhist robes, not as some sort of reward for your grand enlightenment, but you eat Buddhist food and wear Buddhist robes because that's what you do. That's what Buddhas do. That's what you do. You get up in the morning. You put on your robe. You sit down and meditate. You eat breakfast and you wash the dishes. It's in that sense. And in that sense, you yourself are Buddha. The everyday mind is the way. When it's not on the hamster wheel. When it is simply there. Mumon goes on. The monk, however, misled quite a few people into trusting a broken scale. And this is where all this stuff becomes a bit iffy. Because if you apply the hamster wheel to this stuff, it goes wrong. So Mumon says, don't you know you should rinse out your mouth for 3 days when you utter the name of Buddha? If you're genuine, you'll run away holding your ears upon just hearing the words, this very mind is Buddha. Okay. More paradoxical Zen stuff. But no, it isn't. But no, it isn't. They are playing a game here. If you simply take this with the mind of meditation, if you simply take this in that quiet place, then it is, and it is true, and it is straightforward, and it is, and it can be very, very helpful. And if you don't, it will lead to delusion. If you try to make this happen, be true, whatever, if you try to find, if you try this, if you try that, if you try the other, if you get up on the hamster wheel, what's likely to happen is you'll come to the delusion of, well, okay, well, yeah, I am Buddha. Right, so why do I need all this training business? Okay? Whatever comes into my mind is enlightenment. Really? It's got a name, particular delusion. Very, very serious one. So, I hope you will not be misled into trusting a broken scale, i.e., into taking this as something to be put onto the hamster wheel. For if one does, one really should, indeed, rush away holding your ears. No, 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 no. Not in the sense that I'm blocking this away, but in the sense that no, 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 I am not going to think about this. And don't. Think about it. Mumon's verse. He puts a nice little poem for each of these. The blue sky and the blue sky and bright day. Okay, again, descriptions of what is, possibly also descriptions of everyday mind. At rest, clear, still. Goes on, no more searching around. Right. No more ka-chunk, 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 ka-chunk. What is Buddha, you ask? Hiding your loot, you declare your innocence. Hiding your loot, i.e., pretending, as it were, not pretending, but thinking that you don't. Trying to hide, as it were, what's already there, the treasure, the important thing. Not that you're trying to hide it, but in trying you do. That's a little too clever, sorry about that. You declare your innocence. You know, what? You know, not me, not this mind. Surely not this mind. when this mind stops for a moment. Yes, this mind. And not ka-chunk, 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 this mind. And that's number 33. Another monk asks Basho, again, what is Buddha? Same question. It may not have been asked from the same place, however. Basho says to this one, this mind is not Buddha. Again, I don't know what's going on here. What I can offer you is what I can get at this, and that is hamster wheel, no, not the way. He's not denying the other monk's Buddhahood. He's not denying the fundamental Buddhahood of his ordinary mind. He's not denying any of those things. He's simply saying, not that way. Not that way. Mumon's comment is a little bit difficult. He says, if anyone understands this, he is a graduate of Zen. Ooh, dear. I don't think he means graduate in the sense of that it's finished. We just talked about that. Perhaps he means that one can understand that there is, that skill and means is not lying. I mean, it's the same guy saying exactly the opposite things to the same question. But this is skill and means. This is not lying. The poem that follows. If you meet a fencing master on the road, you may give him your sword. If you meet a poet, you may offer him your poem. In other words, you may give the whole thing. You may offer, you may share, give and receive truly. The whole thing, everything. Just what's, everything that's there. In the second half, when you meet others, i.e. those who are not the fencing master or the poet, then say only a part of what you intend. Never give the whole thing at once. Doesn't say never ever give it at once. But when you are not, don't give your whole poem when you are not with a poet. Don't give your whole, you know, don't give your sword when you're not with a fencing master. I.e. watch it. When this is stuff is taken onto the hamster wheel, it deludes both self and other. This is a warning in part to teachers, but it's also something that we can take for our own practice within ourselves. On the one hand, don't try to get the way using any of your favorite hamster wheel procedures. And at the same time, when this ordinary, absolutely ordinary, everyday mind is still for a moment, then hold nothing back. For then you are in the presence of the fencing master. For then you are with the true poet. Now, Dogen has a few comments on all of this. And I'm quoting here from Reverend Hubert's first volume, the chapter Soko Shin Zebutsu, Your Very Mind is Buddha. The saying, Your Very Mind is Buddha, which Buddhas and ancestors have assured us is so, is something not even dreamed of by non-Buddhists or followers of the lesser courses. Only Buddhas and ancestors, and they alone, pass on that one's mind is Buddha and experience its meaning to the fullest. Yes. Experience it to the fullest. And how? Dogen says, having heard of it, they put it into practice and come to realize it for themselves. Just what Joshua did. And then did it again. and again, for 30 years, to fully realize it. You see, this is one of my favorite sayings of Chairman Daiswe, is that there are no formulas. In one sense, that's true. These things are not formulas. And it's all so very, very simple. What's not simple is doing it again and again and again. 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, a lifetime, 2 lifetimes, forever. And if one does do that, it has its effects. The term Buddha, says Dogen, implies that the hundreds of karmic seedlings from defiling passions have been weeded out and discarded. Yes. Remember what we talked about as the givens behind all this? And he says, however, I am not speaking of this term as applied to a 16-foot-tall golden statue. Okay? Right. He's applying it to a living reality. The term soku, that which is immediate, or that's where we get the this very part of this sentence in English, refers to one's spiritual question before one deals with what is right before one's eyes, and before one learns to avoid the blunders that may arise from not dealing with that question. What? Okay. Just the stillness. The stillness before any of the stuff that I just thought about when I read that. I don't know about you. That's what we mean by this very, or that which is immediate. The term ze, meaning is, refers to the three temporal worlds of was, is, and will be, from which there is no retreating or escaping, and which are not merely a figment of the mind. In other words, is, is. The term shin, mind, implies the walls and fences of discernment before they have been mudded fast with mortar, and before one has fabricated anything or added fixtures. Thank you very much. That is lovely. That's just what I do, right? Oh, let's add a little of this. Let's change a little of that. In other words, this very mind, the everyday mind, without the mortar and the rock and the walls that you build and things you do with it and the fabrications and the additions and the etc., etc., etc. We may thoroughly examine these terms in the form of, for instance, your very mind is Buddha, or your mind at this very moment is Buddha, or Buddha right now is your mind, or your very mind is what Buddha is, or this Buddha is your mind right now. Don't figure that. Just listen to it. If you read it, just let it sink. To thoroughly explore the meaning in this manner is precisely an instance of one's very mind being Buddha. In what manner? Not by thinking about it, but being still with it. It is an instance of exactly what it is speaking of. In promoting the meaning, the ancestors passed it on in a straightforward manner. Your very mind is Buddha. And it has come down to us today, accurately transmitted in this form. He continues on, I'm skipping about a page here. Thus, your very mind is Buddha refers to all Buddhas, that is, those who have given rise to the intention to realize Buddhahood by practicing and training.
until they awaken to their enlightenment and realize nirvana. Okay? The givens again. That which underlies all this, and that which flows from all this, and that which to the end of their lives. In what state, I do not know. But this is what they do. Those who have not given rise to this intention, and the intention here, as I understand it, is not simply I intend to, but the doing thereof. The doing at this very moment. Those who have not given rise to the intention to realize Buddhahood by practicing and training until they awaken to their enlightenment and realize nirvana are not those whose very mind is Buddha. Okay? This is the other half of Basso's koan. He's not denying their Buddhahood. Not that. He's saying, not that way. Not at this moment. And at the very moment, and at that very moment, they are Buddha in the sense that we all are, in the sense that everything is. And whilst on the hamster wheel, that isn't the way. That isn't the way. And don't mistake that for the way. Because if you do, you get into some very unfortunate, very grandiose, very long-term sidetracks. Even if for a fraction of an instant you give rise to the intention to train and realize the truth, i.e. even if for a fraction of an instant you step off the wheel, your very mind will be Buddha. Even if for the tiniest imperceptible moment you give rise to the intention to train and realize the truth for yourself, your very mind will be Buddha. Don't look for something more. Just do it. And let it be. Even if for immeasurable eons you give rise to the intention to train and realize the truth for yourself, your very mind will be Buddha. I think that's why they use this word, enlightenment, in several different ways. Because when the stillness, if you will, when one steps off the wheel, whether it be for an instant or whether it be for an eon, it is as it is. It is the Buddha mind. The everyday mind is the Buddha mind. And that is true equally for that instant and for that eon. And to do that day in and day out, Joshu took 30 more years. Even if for the length of one single thought only you give rise to the intention to train and realize the truth for yourself, your very mind will be Buddha. I find that one very comforting. I don't know how your meditation is, but some of the time I only manage to step off the hamster wheel for the briefest of seconds before I'm back on in some other way. And for those briefest of seconds, yes. And with training, with effort, with years of practice, one steps off a bit more and a bit more. Even if, this is another great one, half-heartedly give rise to this intention to train and realize that your very mind is Buddha, will be Buddha. Yeah. Oh, that's a great circular one. I've got to be perfect before I can, right? No. Nowhere is that in the contract. What you have to do is stop sitting in front of the mirror of your mind and being like an infant playing with its toes and see the mirror instead of your toes. All you've got to do is not believe that that flood of emotions is all, it's the be-all and end-all of everything, and is an entire description of the universe. And just step aside for a moment. All you have to do is not entirely quite believe that because you think it, it's true. And step aside for a moment. Etc., etc., etc. Nevertheless, should you say of someone who is taking ever so long to train to become a Buddha that his mind is not Buddha, you have not yet seen your mind to be Buddha, nor do you yet know what the saying means, nor are you yet truly training in the way. Yes. For several reasons. As soon as you come to this conclusion that such and such mind is not Buddha, if it has come to as a conclusion, rather than how Joshu pointed it out, I'm sorry, Basso pointed it out, then what are you doing? Well, you're thinking about it again. Not only are you thinking about it, but you're thinking about it in a judgmental way. It's not only discursive thought, it's judgmental discursive thought. That is not the way. And yet, in the next moment, if you stop that, it is the way. And if you stop that, you will not be of the judgment opinion that one who is taking ever so long, their mind is not Buddha. And there's another reason. And that is that nothing is wasted. Again, understand, this is all predicated on honest training, as best we know how. Full of mistakes, full of sidetracks, full of rough spots. Honest training, nonetheless. That is never wasted. That is a manifestation of Buddha mind, which is everyday mind in the stillness. Therefore, not only do we not want to conclude that someone else who is, quote, taking ever so long, their mind is not Buddha, we don't want to conclude that ourselves about us. Nothing whatsoever in your training is outside of your training. It all has value, it all has purpose, it all leads on to the next chapter and the next and the next. It is all done with purity behind it. It is all done with the purity of the everyday mind being the way. Do not despair. Do not despise your training. Just step off the hamster wheel. And again. And again. And again.
Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha.